Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our analysis of day two of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In studio with me is Dr. Niambi Carter, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Howard University and co-author of Gender and Black Presidential Politics. Also live from the Democratic National Convention is WHUR news reporter Taylor Thomas and her guests. Before we go back to the guests, I want to just play a little bit about one of the most electrifying moments that arguably we've ever seen at a DNC.
The story of generations of people who felt the lash of bondage, the shame of servitude, the sting of segregation, but who kept on striving and hoping and doing what needed to be done so that today I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves.
Well, there it is. One of the best lines from last night from First Lady Michelle Obama. I want to talk to Taylor. Taylor, you've got a new guest.
I do.
And I want to hear reaction about not only the First Lady, but also about the historic significance of today.
Well, right now joining me, we have the Reverend Jesse Jackson, President and CEO of Rainbow Push. Thank you for joining us this evening. It is a historic night for everyone.
Well, in so many ways, for a woman, if Hillary becomes the president, if we work hard, that will happen. Equal rights for women is right around the corner. So many working women of households. Women can't buy bread cheaper, can't buy milk cheaper, can't get rent cheaper. With equal pay for equal work, that's a step in the right direction. She supports historically black colleges, which has seen a cutback in the last few years. 28,000 fewer black colleges, thousands in black colleges because of parent plus loans, for example. Her commitment to gender equality and racial justice is significant to me. Affordable health care. And then you contrast that with Trump talking about deporting 15 million people. How disruptive would that be? Building a 2,000-mile border between us and Mexico. And we do more trade with Mexico in a given day than we do with China and Japan combined. It's irrational. Ban Muslims. There are more Muslims than there are Americans. We're partners around the world. So that shows a narrow view of the world. So I think that Hillary represents a lot of experience and rural view that make America more secure.
Reverend Jackson, would you say, what are blacks expecting from her? You know, there was a big expectation when President Obama took office that things would just trickle down to African Americans everywhere. What are African Americans expecting to directly receive benefits from supporting Clinton the way they are reportedly going to do?
Trickle down there didn't make sense. Trickle down works for dogs and fire hydrants. It's not good economics. The fact of the matter is that there must be some commitment to ban these assault weapons.
Okay.
For which there was no defense. A plan to address racial disparities. A commitment to address and support black colleges. 42% of all black engineers come from black colleges. 15% of all black lawyers and teachers come from black colleges. We've gotten that commitment out of her. A commitment for an urban policy. These cities where the banks use foreclosed on us with schemes of oppression, to offset that by rebuilding cities. That's the thrust that Bill Clinton will be leading. I look forward to working on urban reconstruction. It's about putting people back to work, and it's the morally right thing to do.
Well, Taylor, I want to thank Reverend Jackson for spending some time with us. I want to go back to our phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's talk to John calling from Virginia. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm an independent voter, and I haven't really made up my mind yet. I don't really fall into the typical categories of a Republican or Democrat. And I'm seeing so much on social media, and it's hard to make out, you know, what's real and what's not. And I'm seeing a lot of protesting from Black Lives Matter and Bernie Sanders supporters at the DNC, and that's very confusing because I kind of thought that Black Lives Matter and Bernie Sanders supporters were on the Democrat side. Can you explain that and, you know, kind of let us know what the significance of that will be in this election?
Before I have Dr. Carter try to tackle that, have you made a decision? And if you haven't, why not?
I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2008. I voted for Obama in 2000. or in the actual election, the general election. In 2012, I didn't vote at all. In this election, I'm not sure I'm going to be voting because I'm not very happy with Donald Trump, and I'm not very happy with Hillary Clinton either.
Okay. Dr. Carter, can you try to tackle what he was speaking about earlier, please?
Yeah, I think what Bernie Sanders supporters were pushing for was an actual roll call vote. So for Bernie Sanders supporters, Hillary Clinton was not the nominee already, right? It was not a foregone conclusion. There should have been a roll call vote in their mind to clear this up once and for all. They didn't feel their voices were heard. They felt like the DNC had deliberately hamstrung Bernie Sanders as a candidate. And then the Black Lives Matter folks are out there really pushing the issue around police brutality, raising awareness around more police training,
criminal justice reform, yeah.
more at writ large, right? And so just because they're protesting doesn't mean they won't actually show up and support Hillary in the general election. In fact, the Pew found that Bernie Sanders supporters, about 90% of them said they will actually support Hillary Clinton in the general election if it came to it. So I think you can expect to see something similar for Black Lives Matter protesters. They just want to make sure the DNC doesn't forget that they are there and that they need to be part of the platform.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to Robert calling from Waldorf. Robert, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say, while I appreciate the Black Lives Matter movement, all lives matter. It's unfortunate that it's taking this type of tragedy for this type of march to take place, this protesting. All lives matter. No one wants to have to bury a child. That's crazy. And so if we're going to march about Black Lives Matter, then we should be marching at the same time when we are killing each other. Because we matter. We all matter. And with regards to Hillary Clinton, this is going to be a more prouder moment for me. I believe she's a heck of a representative for not only the women, but as a former military person, I believe that she would be a great commander-in-chief.
You want to respond to that briefly, Dr. Carter, before we go back to Taylor?
Yeah. I mean, no one says all lives don't matter. Black Lives Matter does not mean that no one else matters but black people. That's a misnomer. And I'm sorry, from cities, whether you're in Trenton or Chicago or New York or D.C., Philadelphia, any place, there are always community protests in our communities against black-on-black crime. I even hate using that term. It's a misnomer. Murder is a terrible thing, and nobody wants to see it. So black communities all across this country protest. They may not get coverage, but they do. And there are even people in their communities working to stop violence. The Interrupters, for example, in Chicago, that's about peer-to-peer leadership in attempts to quell gang violence in that city. And you see little models of that around the country. So it's not true that black people don't care when other black people are killed by other black people.
And don't forget, certainly we've seen that Take Back Your Neighborhood movement since the 1990s. And so this certainly, Robert, is not a new thing. But thank you so much for giving us a call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the DNC in Philadelphia with Taylor Thomas.
Welcome back, Harold. We have a wonderful guest that's joining me right now, and she just walked up. Shelley Hettleman. She's a Maryland delegate. Thank you so very much. I know there's a lot of action on the floor as delegates like yourself are celebrating the official nomination of Hillary Clinton. What was going through your mind as the roll call happened, one after another after another?
I have to say it was really, really exciting waiting to get to Maryland and waiting for the opportunity for Congressman Elijah Cummings to announce our support for Hillary Clinton. It was just incredibly exciting and pretty emotional, I have to say.
So I know that in the speeches yesterday and even today, the word I kept hearing over and over again, even with you, Harold, is that we have work to do. So what are you saying to your constituents and Democrats across the country?
We have to beat Donald Trump. I mean, there's no question about it. We have a lot of work to do and come out of here energized on Friday and go back to our communities, go back to the folks across the United States and get people motivated, get people on the phone, get people knocking doors and going house to house and talking friend to friend, family member to family member, talk about the importance of what Hillary Clinton stands for and the values and importance of ensuring that she becomes the first woman president of the United States.
What exactly do we need
to do, as far as we, meaning Democrats, not myself, but those who are listening to us that are Democrats. Specifically, you mentioned some things, because I think right now we've heard the general, we've got work to do. You talked about making phone calls. Is there more directly that can be done on an individual basis?
I think it goes person to person. I mean, literally, it means picking up the phone and calling your cousin in Indiana and calling your aunt in Idaho and talking about how important it is that they register to vote, that they get young people out to vote, that they call their friends, their neighborhoods, their colleagues, their relatives, and talk about the historic nature of this election and also the nature of Donald Trump and what it would mean to this country if he became the next president of the United States.
And what do you say, outside of it making history with her being the first female nominated for a major party, what are the issues that would pull in the young people, that would make them connect with what Hillary is trying to get out?
I think that she is, look, if you look around this arena today and compare it to the arena last week, it is unbelievable the diversity of people here, the different kinds of people, the different colors of people, the different ethnic heritages of people.
And Harold, you can speak to that because you were at the RNC, right?
Absolutely. And that was one of the biggest issues that we discussed during the entire week about the lack of diversity. Yes, there were Latinos there. There were black people there. Yes, there were women there at the RNC. But the numbers, the percentages were significantly less than what we're seeing at the DNC. And I could speak to that same issue even back to 2008 when I was at the Democratic and the Republican National Convention. It was the same there. Taylor, I don't want to let your delegate go before we talk a little bit about Michelle Obama last night. And I want to talk a little bit more about that after this.
And because of Hillary Clinton, my daughters and all our sons and daughters now take for granted that a woman can be president of the United States.
Can we have Ms. Huddleman talk to me about her thoughts about the First Lady's speech last night?
I have to say, listening to it last night, I welled up, and just now I got goosebumps listening to it again.
Smiling from ear to ear.
It was really emotional. It was really incredible. I'm a mom. I'm a mom of a daughter and a son, but I really could relate to her talking about what it was like when she became First Lady and putting her little girls in a car, and she talked about sending them off to school with big, beefy guys with guns.
What have we done?
Right. Yeah. And now, also just being able to share with her daughters, as I can with my daughter and my son, but especially my daughter, that you can grow up and become anything, and that means even the president of the United States.
Harold, can I just tell you, I do think that the talk here started off this morning about Mrs. Obama. She turned things around. The word that I heard all over was the night was hers. Bernie had his star, but the shining star was Mrs. Obama and her direct comment of why she has a very, I think it's two-third favorability, and that young people galvanize with her, and that supposedly this is Hillary Clinton's secret weapon to really reaching the young people, and she comes with a level of trust that the Clinton campaign, from what I'm being told, is looking for.
I want to talk a little bit more about that and Bernie Sanders after the break. I want Dr. Carter to chime in on that, but I do need to take a break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. We are live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We'll be back in just a bit. To the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our analysis of day two of the Democratic National Convention. Dr. Carter, let's talk a little bit about the work that the First Lady put in last night, as well as Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. I would argue that they were both great, but they served two separate purposes. Michelle Obama, obviously, to energize the crowd. Bernie Sanders, to get control of his delegates who were you know, really on the verge of protesting because they're still not happy.
Right, right, for sure. I mean, I think Michelle Obama transferred some of that likability to Hillary Clinton, and that's not a small thing because people get very split about Hillary Clinton, whether they like her and whether they trust her. But there's no doubt that people really like Michelle Obama and they trust her. At the same time, like you said, Bernie Sanders had a lot of work to do in terms of convincing his delegates that Hillary Clinton actually made sense for them and that she was someone that they could trust and that she actually cared about the issues that they cared about. If you read the platform, a lot of the issues around college tuition and all of those kinds of things, the living wage and clean energy are in that platform, in part, I'm sure, as a conciliatory effort toward Bernie Sanders and his supporters trying to galvanize them around Hillary Clinton. So I think they both did excellent jobs. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't even mention Cory Booker, who I think also had a nice turn at the mic last night as well.
One of the things that I kind of compared and contrasted, and I talked about this last night when we were talking about the first day, Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz in similar positions, high profile, taking it to the end for their respective parties. But we saw how Ted Cruz reacted when he had his time to speak and Bernie Sanders. Is that a personality trait or is that a political trait?
I think it's a little bit of both, because I think Bernie Sanders, even when they were debating throughout the primary process, was very clear that if he agreed with Clinton on something, he would say so. Or if he thought something made sense, he would say so, even if it wasn't politically expedient for him. Like we was talking about the Benghazi emails. He said, I'm sick of hearing about those, too. Right. I think Ted Cruz is positioning himself for 2020. And I think he used that moment to try and bash Trump and demonstrate why he will be a strong leader in another 4 years. I think Sanders is very much a political realist, and I think he understands the stakes. And so a Trump presidency is not something he wants to see, even though I believe he truly wants to be president and wanted to do that in his heart of hearts. This was not fun for him. But, you know, this makes more sense than allowing Donald Trump to sort of just take the presidency because we're not as fully happy with Hillary.
Mm-hmm. Taylor, talk to me about the reaction to Bernie Sanders last night. I'm sure that you could also literally, you know, taste, you know, some of the consternation of some of his supporters and maybe even some that were beginning to turn around and lean toward, if not Hillary Clinton, what may be best for the Democratic Party.
It was emotional, to say the least, for Bernie Sanders supporters. He did everything that the party and Clinton, I would think, would hope for as it pertains to supporting him. When he spoke, it was quiet. When he told them that the fight, that he had, you know, in other words, that he had not given up on them, that we still have to continue with the issues, that's when the roar came out. He was given utter respect last night. And as you may have noticed on the roll call today, this convention is also about him, the work that he's done, and that it's not over. And just because he is not the nominee does not mean him and his supporters have been forgotten. So it was a really moving night, and you could tell that he was very appreciative of the party recognizing him for who he was and what he stood for, and his supporters also recognize that. Yes, we do still have some that are upset, but by far it's sure hard to find them today.
Dr. Carter, let's talk a little bit about the significance of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Tim Kaine, on the ticket, vice presidential pick. Talk to me about the significance of Virginia in the role that it's going to have to play as we move into the general election.
Well, for sure, I think Clinton chose Tim Kaine because she needed a man on the ticket. Unfortunately, an earlier caller alluded to this, a lot of men are not comfortable with the idea of a woman being president or all-woman ticket, for example. And so Tim Kaine gives her that balance. He's a man. He's a fairly progressive southerner. Virginia is a big state. Virginia is an important state. But Virginia is also a very odd state because you have Northern Virginia in the southern part of the state, which look very different in terms of values. I mean, Northern Virginia is basically D.C. part two, right? And so it is not in keeping with, say, the southern part of the state.
Or the western part of Virginia.
Absolutely, which is more conservative and a little bit more Republican-leaning. And so I think the hope is that Tim Kaine will help to bridge the gap to moderate and progressive Southerners, and perhaps even bringing in some of those conservative voters who may not be sure about Trump and are not necessarily in love with Hillary, but wouldn't be opposed to her because of Tim Kaine.
And that's interesting. Virginia is neither red nor blue. It's purple.
Right.
And it is, as you said, a big state, not only as it relates to, you know, its political importance, but, you know, its population. And the political diversity, you know, of its population, and certainly a swing state.
Absolutely.
Because President Obama, I believe he won Virginia in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the other things that really helped take him, you know, over the top, although some could certainly argue, particularly in 2008, that it was certainly a blowout.
But I mean, they also elected Doug Wilder.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Go ahead, Taylor.
This is Shelley Hettleman.
Oh, Shelley, please go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to add one thing that I think is important, and that is Hillary Clinton talked about wanting to select somebody as vice president who could actually step into the role of president and be there if, God forbid, something happened to her. And I think that Tim Kaine brings that credibility, that governing experience, that executive experience, managerial experience, foreign policy experience that he's had in the Senate and the Foreign Relations Committee in the last couple of years, and he brings the seriousness and the chops to be able to step into that role should he have to.
Yeah, he's got a long resume. Certainly, that is the case, as well as being a veteran. So, you know, the man certainly on paper is qualified. Certainly, if you ask the RNC members, they would debate that, but that's to be expected. I want to talk to Taylor a little bit about the role, a little bit more about the role of women, but specifically mothers and the role that they will be playing, not just tonight, but throughout this DNC.
You know, I think that's interesting here because there's no heads up about what they are directly expected to say. We know that they're going to be on stage. We have a list of about seven names from the mother of Eric Garner, Sabrina Fulton, mother of Trayvon Martin, mother of Michael Brown, mother of Sandra Bland, and they are going to talk about their participation in the party and perhaps what the Clinton-Kaine campaign has committed to make sure this never happens to another family again. So as far as us directly having correspondence with them and hearing what they're going to say, that's why there's a little bit of concern which direction. I mean, that's a lot of people to go on stage, and I'm hoping that everyone is going to be in one accord with what it is that they're going to say. Now, tonight, you know, we have Eric Holder that'll take the stage, former Attorney General Madeleine Albright will take to the stage, and of course, you know, President Bill Clinton will take to the stage, and he's expected to clearly lay out why Hillary Clinton should be the next president of the United States, starting from Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013, a New York Senator 2001 to 2009, First Lady of the United States when Bill Clinton was president from 1993 to 2001, First Lady of Arkansas 1983 to 92, and even served as a congressional legal counsel. She's a Yale graduate from their law school, a Juris Doctorate from them. The list goes on and on. She has years of decades, actually, serving the public, and that's what former President Bill Clinton will state his case tonight, why those who may be on the fence or Bernie Sanders supporters that are not sure why, he's going to lay the case. And, of course, you know, he is well-liked among most African-Americans. He has some things that he has to work on, too. The big sticking point for African-Americans with Bill Clinton is that crime bill, that omnibus crime bill he signed back in 1994, which, as you know, many people blame for the incarceration of numerous African-American young men.
But let me drill down a little bit on that, because as you went through Hillary Clinton's resume, and certainly it is a well-respected, she looks great on paper, but Hillary Clinton has not done well communicating during this campaign, and her husband has been known to really kind of cut through all of the mess and take it directly to the people. Is Bill Clinton an asset, Dr. Carter, or is he a liability?
I think he can be an asset. I think it'll depend on what he says. I mean, Bill Clinton has a lot of charisma.
Yeah.
People respond very well to him. I think Hillary Clinton has softened a lot over the last 8 years. So I think she deserves some credit for at least attempting to tap into that. And I think part of that is this reliance on her being a woman and not running away from that and trying to eschew that, but really talking about what does it mean to be a mother, a grandmother, a wife, and how does that make her relatable to a lot of people, even men, right? So I think Clinton can be an asset for her because he's still, I think, fairly well liked, and he clearly can turn on the charm. He clearly knows how to talk to people. He clearly is the charismatic personality of the two.
But that's a tightrope for women.
Absolutely.
When you said, you know, she has certainly softened because perhaps there's an expectation that she needed to soften. You don't hear anyone say that about men per se. And then you have men who aren't comfortable with the prospect of a woman being president. Is she still going to have to continue to walk that tightrope as we get to the general?
Absolutely. I mean, the truth is, if she's too harsh, then people really don't like her. If she's too soft, then people say, oh, well, she's just a woman. She's crying. But I do think there's something about her life experience in all of those various roles that she's had, because she's been all of those things while she's been a first lady, while she's been a senator, while she's been a secretary of state. But she was a little more reticent to talk about those things. And I think there's a way that she can communicate that she understands the lives that people live and also be strong and effective.
Taylor, give me a quick wrap up of tomorrow. You got about 20 seconds before we close out.
Harold, tomorrow's going to be a big night. The title is Working Together. President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden are some of the keynote speakers. Their focus tomorrow will be an in-depth look on just what's at stake for the American public in this election and why Hillary Clinton is experienced and has the steadiness to lead this country.
Okay, there you go. Dr. Nyambi Carter, Dr. Ife Williams, Reverend Jesse Jackson and Shelley Hettleman, and of course, reporter Taylor Thomas. Thank you all so much
for participating
in this conversation. And we will certainly be back tomorrow for day three in our analysis of the Democratic National Convention. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Tuesday, July 26. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, or follow us on Twitter at Daily Drum, WHUR. Of course, the hashtag WHURDNC. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.